Thank you very much there, Natural E. And again, you are listening to Eco Radio KC, so you got that going for you. And we're really thrilled tonight because Stan Slaughter is back here at KKFI. Stan Slaughter, the eco troubadour, who has been at it for many, many years, and now was just returned from across the pond, or about a month ago you were there. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So welcome to Eco Radio, KC.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
Thanks,
sorry we didn't have any tea.
Oh, no.
Ready,
it's okay.
For
I didn't get that habit over there. it's pretty strong, actually.
So you were invited to speak at this. Is this an annual event?
It will be.
This was
the first.
This was the inaugural event, and it's Highgrove Gardens.
Highgrove Gardens. The lady works for Highgrove Enterprises. They have a garden store in a local town, and you know, the management of the business, the tours that the volunteers give, people pay to come take the tours, and so you know, there's the gardens, but then there's the enterprises that pays the gardeners and, you know, does the business of the gardens. And that lady was Christine Prescott, and she personally invited me. Actually, she didn't invite me. She emailed me and said, you know, out of contact from your website. You know, you can always see the website email that comes in.
Right.
And said, can I have your mailing address? I'd like to send you an invitation to an event. And very clear, you know. And this is Prince Charles's event, you know. And we're going, oh, yeah, right. And this is a different twist on the Nigerian scam, you know. But we didn't see much harm in sending them our mailing address, you know.
Right.
And they instantly Googled Highgrove Enterprises, Highgrove Gardens, you know, Highgrove Gardens. And it's real, it's big, it's there, you know. And then about a month later, we got this hand-signed letter from the prince. And
wow.
It's quite the document here.
Wow. That's
yeah, we looked up his signature, and that's what it looks like. You have to kind of figure out.
That's great.
Decipher Charles from there. But.
So this is the prince's personal garden.
Exactly. He has many estates and places to live, and one of the richest men in the world. But in 1980, early on, he bought this place with the express intent of creating a sustainability demonstration center. And those gardens, those meadows and everything, are preserving wildflowers that are endangered.
Wow. Oh, really?
I talked to a naturalist who said that Britain has lost 50% of their regular domestic bird species in the last 30 years.
Wow.
Half of all their birds are extirpated. That they're not extinct, you know.
Yeah.
But they don't live in England anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a pretty serious degradation situation over there in population and density and development.
So that, I mean, that bears repeating.
Yeah.
Like
half
50%
of
the species are no longer there.
No longer
there.
Were
there 30 years ago.
Right. And yeah. they may or may not be extinct. They didn't mention that. But
right.
They don't live in a pretty big place like England. That means they lost a lot of habitat.
Do they know why?
Development.
Yeah.
You know, the same old stuff, you know. But so there were some very legitimate reasons to move in this direction. And he's got solar collectors on things, and his whole greenhouse is heated by a big earth source heat pump, and very green building, and of course, totally organic. There's never been a pesticide or an herbicide on the place, and they have a big compost facility, and the heat, I think it's the greenhouse with wood chips as well as geothermal, and he's done a lot of energy stuff on the house. It's not Downton Abbey. It's a much smaller place than that, but it's still big by our standards, and so I know that they did some big changes in there too.
So is it zero footprint or approaching zero footprint?
I couldn't say.
Or is that the goal?
I couldn't say. The biggest thing is to make people aware and make it available. I don't know that there's I know of one other environmental demonstration center I toured while I was there, but nothing like that, no sustainability garden that I'm aware of. For people to tour with that profile, obviously, you know, you want to see what the prince is up to. And people may not know, you know, he goes to the climate conferences. He's got a voice for environmental that almost no citizen in the world has. I mean, a track record of speaking out. He gave a speech to the UN called The Future of Food, very much on target with the local regionalism that we're talking about here and the organics and all that. So, you know, to be invited by an environmentalist of that profile with or without the royalty is pretty interesting.
But, right.
I think what's happened is he's got his estate, got the whole place in good shape, and people are – the tours are popular and people are coming, and he felt like he would be able to support this. He has 20 different charities, and many of them are international, you know, enrichment programs to schools, microloans, just, you know, a broad range of stuff, just things that are very admirable to see that someone would be up to. So just, you know, that part of it alone is very important. The fact that I was able to help support it. And, you know, I was saying, now you're inviting me to fly across, you know, a quarter of the way across the planet here, and there's not even a plane ticket. You know, what is deal,
yeah.
You know? And I said, people in Kansas pay me to come see them, you know? But so anyway, that led to the other half of the story, which was we actually told them that we were a little pessimistic about our ability to fund it. And if you talk about Linda's and I ability to fund it, it was not possible, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I have this very inspirational, hard-charging young daughter-in-law, and she said, "You got to do it. You can't turn down an invitation from the prince. You got to go for it." And I said, "Well, how are we going to do it?" She said, "Put it on GoFundMe, and just make an appeal and start calling your family and friends." You know, and the truth is, by the time I got through the T's in my Rolodex with personal emails to friends, we had $10,000, not $8,000, but $10,000.
Wow.
And I never got to UVWXYZ, although there's not too many there. But, you know, just local businesses, Missouri Organic, the compost facility gave us $400. Lots of people, you know, in the $100 range in 50s and 25s. And 130 people funded it for us. And
that's incredible.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's. I had a.
So at what point did you realize this is actually going to happen? Like,
well, pretty quick when we started off pretty fast, and you know, within 3 weeks or so, I believe we were up around 4,000, and that was looking like it was going to get the tickets bought, and you know, we were figuring, you know, kamikaze mission, we'll go and see if we can get back. You
right,
know?
Exactly. Have another
we did buy
go
round trip tickets, but
there.
You know, that was that and enough lodging and food, maybe, you know, and by the time it was in that zone, we were committed all along. But when it took off so fast, it made the decision pretty easy.
What's England like in April?
About 3 weeks behind. It's about the middle of March.
Okay.
Or a little first week of March.
Okay. Yeah. Makes sense.
You know, it's 700 miles north.
Yeah.
So you can figure out what the Canadian border is like a little bit north of that, actually.
So the days are longer than...
Really long.
Yeah.
Wow. Our days now are probably just getting as long as their days were then, you know.
So does that make for a longer growing season there?
It does. Yeah. That's why they get those 40-pound cabbages up in Scotland and Alaska and stuff like that much sun.
Yeah, that place, is it Findhorn?
Findhorn, yeah. We went there in 2011 and 12, just right over the new year.
Yeah.
But, that's a huge thing. That was a terrific. Those are two kind of pretty happy with my two destinations so far to the United Kingdom. You know, I've been kind of proud of those two because they were, those of you who don't know, Findhorn is a spiritual community up on the on the North Sea, kind of near Inverness, but just on a spit of land that was started by some spiritual folks who were listening to the spirits of the plants and doing what they were told to do to make the plants grow bigger. And they got famous. Paul Hawken wrote a big book about it, The Magic of Findhorn. And one of them got the lady who was doing the kind of tuning in, said, "It's time to build some cabins." And they said, "Well, you got nobody coming." He says, "We need to be able to build a bunch of cabins."
Wow.
And about that time, the Magic of Findhorn broke loose and a horde of American tourists came over the hill and filled them up right on time.
If you build it, they will come.
Yeah. So that was the other place we went. But I'm just really impressed. I mean, my goodness, what kind of people would the prince hire to make him look good? And that, those were really good people.
Yeah.
But the presenters, the gardeners that we met were just excellent folk, you know. Met the prince's personal florist. He did Camilla's wedding with Prince Charles and the christenings of the young children there and all that stuff. And he was Shane Connolly, not Sean Connery, but Shane Connolly. that's the way I remember it, however.
Yeah.
But a great guy and this wildlife guy who told me about the birds and the Wiltshire Wildlife Center. And that wasn't all. We got to go some other places around the British Isles, but down in Cornwall, and it was a trip of a lifetime. You know?
Well, good for you. I'm so glad for you, and thanks for coming on and sharing this with our listeners, so we can all live through you vicariously. So we're going to take our first break, and we'll be right back with Stan Slaughter, Eco Troubadour, here on Eco Radio KC. We'll be back in a moment. And here we are back in the studio, Eco Radio KC. My name's Mike Murphy. Natural E is here with us. And Stan Slaughter is here in the studio with us, telling us about his trip to England to Highgrove Gardens. How big is Highgrove Gardens?
I never got that. I don't know if that's for the public to know.
Right, yeah.
I could see maybe 200 acres or more easily.
Yeah.
And there were pastures and sheep and heritage heirloom breeds of cattle and sheep that he's preserving and breeding up, you know. And there's some, you know, things you don't see every day, you know, with the markings of the cattle and just that'd be their different styles and types that were, you know, had specific niche purposes for a homesteader or a small farm in England, you know, lots of meat and decent milk, you know, or whatever combination of traits that aren't needed now or thought to not to be needed now.
And right.
So those varieties can go extinct and certainly the wildflowers we mentioned, and there was a lot of diversity in his gardens and, you know, a lot of heirloom varieties of plants grown, too. So seed saver type work.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. And you got to see the book.
Yeah.
We bought this coffee table book about it because one of the biggest shocks, we drove up to the guard shack and kind of – there is a guard shack. I mean, he's armed. There was no photography allowed. You just can't go snapping on the grounds. And a security risk, and also, I think, kind of a royal image thing. I mean, you talk about not knowing what it's like to be around royalty. Most of us in the Midwest have no idea, you know, what the protocols are. And it was a shock and kind of sad because we didn't realize we weren't going to be able to take pictures of me making my speech or record my speech or do anything with that. So that was kind of just let that one go, you know. So so Stan, how did you get into this? Well, see, I had a seventh grade science teacher, and he told me that he wanted to be buried 2 feet down in a cardboard box because he wanted to be the first one to grow flowers.
Oh, wow.
And see, when you're 13 years old, that will, like, twist. You might even twist your brain when you're older than 13. But when you're 13 and you're a farm kid, and you've buried some lost animals, you know, and some things like that, you say, "Whoa, that's strange," you know. And so it led me. It sent me spiraling off down this weird path of organic educator and writing songs like The Composters.
All right.
There's old dead leaves in your neighborhood. They're blowing around like you knew they would. The dumps are full all over town, but you need some help breaking this stuff down. I'm talking about a hard-working bunch. They take green leaves, turn them into lunch. They take green grass and turn it chocolate brown. You'd be amazed how they wharf it down. They're composting, they're just chewing. Composting and just grooving. I ain't gonna tell you just what you should do, but I'd call the composters if I were you. They like it hot, they need a place to work. You have to feed them leaves and grass and dirt. Just mix them up with their favorite food. Build them a pile so they can groove. The composters, they're just chewing. Composting, they're just grooving. I ain't gonna tell you just what you should do, but I'd call the composters if I were you. The composter, yeah.
Wow. So, great song.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And that was originally on Stan's album Rot and Roll.
Yes, yes. You can't be you can't be too proud, you know, when you're doing.
So your name is apparently synonymous with composting at this point. That, you know, when they say, when the prince says, "Get me a composter," and you're the one that they reach out to.
Well, there's plenty of other authors and speakers about composting, and I've met a few going to the conferences, you know, in the United States Compost Council. But in 2000, the United States Compost Council said, "Stan, you're the outstanding educator of the year for the United States." And so, you know, I've been recognized at some level. And Christine Prescott, this lady, said, you know, she liked the vibe of the website. My website says Green Living Made Simple.
Yeah.
And she liked the fact that I was an educator in schools and that I used music, although they didn't want me to play. So this is kind of serious.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did sing a couple of lines a cappella because of after I told that seventh grade science teacher story, I said, that, you know, I got so strange that I sang songs like this, you know. But anyway, yeah, certainly in the Metro, I can tell somebody who's, you know, I'm the second or third call, you know. They called this guy and they said, "Call Stan," you know. And so I get these calls about composting and things. And that's an honor, really, to be able to talk about it.
It is. That's great.
Well, and the speech is called "The Alchemy of Composting," and see, this is magic stuff, you know. And we've come so far down the wrong road as far as using up our soil, and nature always gives it to us after a significant period underneath the forest and underneath the prairies. There's a rich soil with 5 or 6% organic matter.
Mm.
And, you know, we chopped and cut our way all the way across the eastern half of the United States until we got to the prairies. Didn't think there was anything good underneath the sod, couldn't cut the sod, kind of gave up in exasperation, you know.
Yeah.
Decided we'd go cut the Northwoods next, you know.
Yeah.
But when we have that 5 or 6% organic matter and don't waste it, don't use it, don't burn it up and maintain it, there's some actual literal alchemy that happens in the soil when there's that much life, you know. Nature doesn't start with a deficit. If she's got a deficit, She'll grow plants. They'll not do well. The pests will come. They'll die, and they get composted. You know, they get she doesn't start growing healthy crops until she's got the reserve to do it.
Yeah,
and that's one of the points I was making about it. And there's so many amazing things that happen. For example, did you know that when there's enough organic matter in the soil, plants will take almost half of the sugar they make and push it out through their roots into the dirt?
I did not know that.
Seems like a waste. But what happens is bacteria grow with the sugar, and each plant has its own set of flavors of sugar. Maple syrup, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the point is those exudates, root exudates exuding from the roots, encourage bacteria to grow around the root. And it's kind of like if you can imagine the root of a plant with a kind of a white, slimy coating on every root. That's what's happened. They're there to protect an invader from getting to the root, and they're feeding on the juices around the root. And what happens is the bacteria, the population grows so fast that predators come. And the predators start, the amoebas and the protozoas, the one-celled predators, and they're scarfing up these bacteria like crazy and belching and pooping and farting all over this microenvironment. And what happens is the plant gets the nitrogen it needs on time, right where it can use it, in aqueous ammonia and nitrate form, instead of being, you know, God doesn't go out and check the NKP ratio and give you a 5-5-5 fertilizer.
Right.
You know, plants make what they need as they need it, where they need it, and use it without waste. This is what we're just beginning to find. I'll tell you a story. There's a new book called The Hidden Half of Nature. And it says, the author says, the level of information we're gaining about the microbiome, the living microenvironment around plants, in the soil, and in our gut. And this is a big deal about allergies and ADHD and asthma and Crohn's disease, and all these diseases are found to be helped by a rich microflora in the gut. It says the level of information we're gaining now about the microbiome is equal to the realization that the Earth moves around the sun. It's that earth-shaking a set of understandings. And one quote was, thousands of truly useful PhDs will be had in this field.
Wow.
I got to tell you, there's a story that comes from this. So my brother John lives in Fresno, and he's a world-famous plant breeder. If you have a nectarine that you really like the taste of, thank Brother John, because he's grafted and bred these varieties of nectarines. He sold 40,000 trees to the King of Jordan.
Wow.
So one of his friends is a guy who was making soils for playing fields in the desert, out in Fresno in the San Joaquin Valley. No rain, almost hot. So he was building these soils out of compost and rich ingredients, and then going into a football stadium and just covering the ground with his soil and then planting the grass. And he was, you know, had the best looking grass. Nobody had ever grown grass like that in the San Joaquin Valley. So he was doing this, making special blends that only he knew how he was doing it. So he dumped a big load of it on a parking lot, getting ready to put it on the church playing field. And the rains came. And for 6 months, he could not get to that. He could get to the compost pile on the asphalt parking lot, but he couldn't spread it because the ground was, you know, he'd be big ruts and everything. So he came back 6 months later, scooped up all the compost, tried to put it on the playing field, and what he found was all the asphalt was gone.
Wow.
The compost pile had eaten all the asphalt, and nothing left but clean white rocks at the bottom of the pit.
Wow.
So he wisely scooped up the critters that had grown in the bottom of that compost and started culturing them.
Wow.
So he came up with 5,600 different species in this compost brew, okay? 100 of them were totally unknown to science.
Wow.
They've never been seen or heard of before. And five of them were so weird, their DNA was so weird, they couldn't tell where to put them in the current kingdom, phyla, you know, like,
genus,
is it an animal or is it a vegetable? We can't tell.
Yeah, wow.
You know, so, and the people, I believe it's Berkeley where they're studying this, you know, they're not only going to have world-class PhDs, they may have Nobel Prizes coming out of this. It's amazing. And what good is it? He separated 12 strains of this juice out, and he mixes them and brews up 10,000-gallon tanker trucks of this stuff and sprays it on the fields. Well, when it's a dry desert, microfine soil, and anything that's alive in the soil, the little roundworms attack it like crazy. So the big business out there is to grow almonds and to grow strawberries and to grow things in the desert. And but the nematodes are terrible. So they arranged the test. They put Monsanto, Monsanto's anti-nematode spray on 1,000 strawberries. They put Syngenta's anti-nematode spray on 1,000 strawberries. And they put Ron's compost hooch on 1,000 strawberries, okay? Monsanto lost 600.
Wow.
Syngenta lost 600. Ron lost 6.
Wow.
And so my brother says that he's been offered blank checks in the billions.
Wow. Wow.
For that one recipe. And Monsanto is known to be researching biologicals because it's, you know, they're God's bugs, but it's finders keepers.
Yeah.
If you've got a culture that's doing this. In fact, the Japanese effective microorganisms, the Bokashi composting thing that they use over there, those were just cultured out. What Ron says is, this is the A team. He said, you could have the B team in your soil, but why not just get the A team? You know, why not get the best bugs you can get? And this whole deal of understanding the microbe, what happens is somebody, one of those critters, infects the almond roots or the other roots and transfers some kind of effect in that slime along the edges of the roots that keeps the nematodes away.
Wow.
And we don't know squat about this. This is, you know.
That's amazing.
That's just one of the stories that was in there. And
all right, we're going to take another break. If you have a question you'd like to ask Stan, you can always call 816-931-5534, and we'll be back momentarily with Stan Slaughter. Our guest is Stan Slaughter. And Stan, you've got so many fascinating things to share with us.
Well, I had said the subtitle of the speech is How 2 plus 2 equals 9, if you let it. And, you know, the answer is put more organic matter in the soil and watch the miracles come, you know, because we're just beginning to understand, you know, we were using this as all along when we were fertilizing with manures and doing sustainable agriculture back before there was unsustainable ways to do agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
But we never understood what was happening. And now this guy Ron says, it used to cost me $50,000 to sequence the genome of a microbe. He says, now it's $50 and we can do it on a laptop in 10 minutes.
Really?
He says, it's going to be 10 pretty soon. $10.
Wow.
To sequence the DNA of a microbe. In a vial, you know, plugs into your laptop like a square reader, you know. So the technology has really done a lot, and the ability to to study and see microscopically what's going on at these levels is. But it's, you know, it's not trying to find a planet where we could go someday, maybe, you know, or trying to find a quark little brother, you know, or whatever in the micro, you know. I call it the Middle Earth, you know. We're finding it's under our feet and in our guts, you know. And so this is an exciting time. And I'd like to be lecturing about this more, you know, speaking and telling people about it. Because It is cool. I'll tell you one. Can I tell you one more
story? Please do. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, not only do plants put the sugars out through it, they actually have some a partnership with fungus. And you may have seen tiny little white hairs in your compost pile, or you may understand what a mycorrhizal fungus is. It's myco means fungus and rhizal means root. And they're one cell wide roots. And they're very, very tiny. And if you think of having a mushroom in the middle of a bunch of fibers, that's cool. But actually take the mushroom out in your mind and put it in a plant root. And what happens is the plant, these mycorrhizal fungi grow into the root of the plant. And they take some of the carbohydrates, the sugars that the plant has made, and they grow. Because carbs underground are hard to find. Minerals and water, okay, you know, but yeah. Carbs, not so much. So the plant provides the carbohydrates. The fungus brings back water and minerals. And fungi are the main part of a lichen, and lichens grow on rocks. And the reason they grow on rocks is the fungi dissolves the rock. So You may not have enough minerals in your soil. You take up your little scraping, you send it in. Oh, you don't have enough phosphorus and enough calcium. Well, no, that's the dirt. Uh-huh. The fungus goes out and takes that rock and dissolves it and turns it into soluble phosphorus and brings it back to the plant and gives it to them. And a sweet little kiss, and takes some carbohydrates and goes off and does some more. And the roots system can be get a 30,000% increase, 300-fold increase, just from the association with these little fungi. Okay. And they have the ability to chelate, to grab. Now, you get too much lead in your blood. Alternative physicians will give you some chemicals that chelate it and pull the lead out of your blood and sequester it.
Yeah.
And brownfields, the industrial wastelands that we have, we add compost. And the compost sequesters the heavy metals, and it works great. Well, this friend of mine from central Illinois was an 8-year intern in sustainable gardening. He was in Austria. And he heard this story from people who were there at the time. But when Chernobyl blew up, there was a 100-mile swath of toxic stuff right through the middle of Austria with Vienna in the middle.
Wow.
So they shut down all their vegetable production because calcium is a big part of vegetables, and radioactive fallout has cesium and strontium, which are both kind of take the place of calcium. So anywhere you had calcium, you would have a radioactive ion going into your bones, you know, which is kind of like of death sentence. So one farmer didn't shut down. And people turned him in, and the inspector came out and checked him and said, wait a minute, I got to go get and fix my machine. He went back and recalibrated his machine, came back and said, my machine's still messed up. Went back to Vienna, came back the next day with two more machines, tested them all out. Oh, nuts. Went back again, came back and said, guess what? It's not my machines. It's your vegetables. They're clean.
Wow.
And everybody else's vegetables were contaminated, because the soil had radionuclides in it, and that was being picked up by the plants. So he said, your vegetables are clean. Go ahead and sell them. And they were trucking in vegetables from everywhere else, so this was pretty welcome that he could do this. But what happened was this guy had built up his organic matter from not the 2% that's in American farm soils, not the 5 or 6% that nature gives us underneath a forest or a prairie, but 18%.
Wow.
So 18% organic matter is like potting soil.
Yeah.
This guy said, my friend from Illinois said, I could go out to any point in that field and stick my arm up into the soil, up to my elbow by hand.
Wow.
And so what happened was there was so much organic matter in there that had so much chelation effect that it locked up all the strontium and all the cesium and made the calcium available.
Wow.
So we don't even know what we're going to find as we go down this road. We know that we're benefiting, but it's kind of a blind benefit. We're trusting nature, and that's the only, you know, the only force I'm willing to trust with my life, you know, as far as this goes. Certainly not mankind, but we're trusting nature and doing our best to follow the rules and grow organically and, you know, not waste energy and all the other things we're trying to do. But learning what's happening, learning these mechanisms is going to be fascinating because they have tremendous side effects, you know. People with Crohn's disease, they're getting fecal transplants.
What?
Yeah. They get a live cultural reinjection of bacteria into the colon, colonic, except the colonic contains somebody else's poop. And you're going, but there's in your intestines, there's 150 times more DNA than you have.
Really? Wow.
There's wow. Many, you know, like if you did the critter count of you, you would be about 5%. And the other critters that are in you and on you would be the 95%.
I see what you mean.
Wow.
So these guys are mostly in the large colon, you know, in the colon, the large cavity of the colon, hatching out, finding habitat in the pockets on the sides and doing all this stuff. And the way we eat and the way we process our food is key. Some of the tribes in Africa who eat a lot of roots have a whole another third of diversity than we do. Another, you know, we have X, they have 1.3X of species.
Wow.
That are there that we would never contact in our lives. And there's another a guy named Leach. He wrote a book called Honor Thy Symbionts. And he actually did a fecal transplant with one of these natives. He's a wild man. He would try anything. He did that. Yeah. It would be pretty strange. But there are people on the edges looking at all these ideas, and it's a truly exciting time in biology and gardening and human health. So let's see. You got time for one more?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. This is a kind of history and everything else, but the Spaniards sent explorers to Peru in 1530s looking for gold, swarming all over the mountains looking for gold. And that's what they did. And one batch of about 40 of them got lost and went over the far side of the Andes and down the Amazon.
Mm, wow.
And they were so hungry they ate their shoes.
Wow.
They could just barely walk. They were.
I think they call that soul food.
they were in deep thank you for that, yes. But they came down the hill, down into the valleys, and they used their guns to scare off the villagers who'd never seen a gun and got some food. And then they realized they saw this river and said, we got to go that way. And they stopped at the river's edge. They burned some wood. They made charcoal. They found some iron ore. They smelted the iron ore. They made nails. And in a month, they had two boats big enough for 20 men each. Mm. Cut down the wood, built the nails. I mean, this is enterprising.
Yeah.
So they had these two boats, and they started down the Amazon. Well, 1530, what happens? They found millions of people in the Amazon. They found white plastered cities, big ones. They found roads wide enough for four horses to gallop abreast on. They found better pastures than there were in Spain, better gardens than they'd ever seen in their lives. They started going away from the river, and the road got bigger and bigger and bigger. And they kept seeing more and more Indians. And they said, I think we'll go back to the river. And they were under attack almost the whole way down. They went 240 miles at one point, always in sight of a dock or a boat tied up on the river. There was no uninhabited stretch.
Wow.
On the Amazon. The population, thousands of times bigger than it is today. You know, we've got these scattered tribes of hunter-gatherers. These people were farmers. And what they found was they eventually made it home. They wrote about it. One guy came back 50 years later, came up the Amazon, found nothing.
Wow.
Because these guys had given them all their diseases.
Oh.
And they had all died.
Oh.
And when the jungle took over, it sucked up so much carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere that it became the little ice age in Europe. It went from a normal level of carbon dioxide in 1530 to a much lower level that corresponds with the ice age temperatures, not global warming, but global cooling in a rapid way that changed the whole climate of the Earth. And one of the big hopes we have is that we've already vaporized 80 billion tons of carbon from the soil and from the plants on the surface of the soil. And we can easily reverse that. We know what to do. This isn't building any infrastructure. This is putting organics in the soil. And once we do that, the plants will be so much more vibrant. We'll suck up a lot more carbon dioxide, too. So there's two books called Cows Save the Planet and The Soil Will Save Us. And they're both talking about how this particular thing will, you know, sequestering carbon in the soil and in plants is a very easily calculation to be solved. The reason the Amazons did it is that they understood that burning wood created charcoal. Charcoal has micro pores. The Amazon gets 300 inches of rain a year, washes all the nutrients out of the soil. Well, the charcoal stays. It's hard. And bugs, microbes, water, minerals sequester in those holes. It's like putting a reef out in the ocean and all of a sudden you got fish.
Yeah.
Well, they found out that they made soils that were 9 feet deep.
Wow.
Black soils in the middle of this orange clay. And that's where that food came from.
Wow.
And if you do an X-ray radar from the satellite, you see these patches of this black soil at the junctions of the major rivers. In other words, they built their gardens right by the trade routes and built the cities right beside the gardens.
Yeah.
And now we know how to make biochar.
Yeah.
And it's becoming a big part of American agriculture, and it's worth about 25% productivity because it holds water, it holds nutrients, and it will last. Biochar has a half-life of 1,600 years.
Oh, man. Wow.
So you really only have to put it in once. And, you know, there are some really great arguments for the idea that we could take this overgrown woods we have, burn them into biochar, make either fuel for cars and combustion engines or make electricity with the fires that we burn, collect the biochar when we're done and put that in the soil. We could generate electricity as we do it. There's just – this is a thrilling field right now, and the book count, number of people writing about it is really, really going up. And you can always tell when you get a whole bunch of new books about, you know, the microbiome solution, you know, good gut, these other books that are coming out. There's a lot happening there. So,
well, Stan, this time has gone by so quick. We have to make sure we get you back more frequently here because you've got so much to share. And so Stan Slaughter, everybody, his website is stanslaughter.com.
Composteducation.com.
Yeah, and thank you again, and again, we will have you back on hopefully a lot sooner, but less time between visits. And we're going to turn it over to Natural E for the calendar of events. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Instead of going out with This Week in Water this week, we are going to go out with a Stan Slaughter song instead.